We have an alarm clock ready to go off at noon. Don't worry about it.
We have an alarm clock, so I don't even need the watch. Last week, of course, I was supposed to speak about Tu B'Shvat, the 15th day of the Hebrew lunar month of Shvat, the new year for trees. Of course, weather did not help us. Little Puxatony Phil had other plans. And we ended up here a few days after the New Year for Trees. But because we have delicious oranges coming our way, won't even tell what it is, but something good, something sunny coming our way. And because it is significant that we talk about Tu B'Shvat, the little mystery of this strange holiday where we all break our teeth on Kerab Boxa, it's got to be a little bit more to it than that. So it behooves us perhaps to talk about what is Tu B'Shvat and perhaps relate it, because I believe it inexorably relates to the land of Israel, both past and present. And perhaps at the end we'll have some Q&A, some questions, some time to dialogue about some things to do with Israel or Jewish law. In Judaism, we have a way using what's called gematria, Jewish numerology, to use letters of the Hebrew alphabet that we ascribe numerical value to. So the word Tu B'Shvat literally means the 15th in Shvat. So the one who understands gematria, Jewish numerology, is never going to say when is Tu B'Shvat, because it's like saying, you know, where is General Washington's white horse? What color was he? Or when was the war of 1886? Whatever. It's the same idea. The 15th day of Shvat. The rabbis tell us that what is the significance of this day? It is the new year for trees. The Rosh Hashanah le'ilanot, for trees. Now, that's a very strange statement. I mean, what does that mean? We go wish a good gebench to yor, we wish a nice, happy, blessed year to our trees. It's like a Jewish Arbor Day, but what does it really mean? So in Jewish law, very succinctly, it means the following, that there are laws specific to the land of Israel of tithes. If you are a Jewish farmer, you live in the land of Israel proper, the moment that we decide when the tithe that you will give, what we call miser, the tenth of your crop, it is decided by each Tu B'Shvat, 15th day of Shvat. Now there is an argument among two very famous schools of learning, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, who, believe it or not, didn't argue about everything, as Jewish people like to do. You know, the famous joke of the Jew, the Robinson Crusoe Jew on the island who builds the two synagogues, and he's asked, why two if you're one guy? Because that's the temple I pray at, and that's the one I never go to. Right? So there is always a little element of disagreement, shall we say, among Jewish people. We're all, you know, two Jews and three opinions of that mindset. But that said, Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel actually argue in a very profound rule. We know that on our New Year, our Rosh Hashanah, the first day of Tishrei in September time, where we go to synagogue and we are judged as human beings, and the New Year begins, that at that point, we count 4 months from that point, according to the Institute of Shammai, and we say that all the water that we are judged for on the Jewish New Year, for people, 4 months henceforth, in the future, that is when that will take effect. Why? Because for 4 months, we have a supply of water to keep us okay. And if you take 4 months from the first day of Tishrei, you end up with the first day of the month of Shvat. Okay, but that's not Tu B'Shvat, because we know it's 15 days after. Why the 15-day disparity? Hillel, the great yeshiva of Hillel, the sage, comes along and says, no, 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 no. Yes, we're judged on the first day, on the Jewish New Year, but the water, the actual blessing of how much and when the water will fall, that is not nechtam, it's not decided and sealed upon until the Festival of Tabernacles, what we call Sukkot. So that's a little bit of a disparity, first day or the 15th day. Really, whoa, listen to this. They're actually not arguing about what we think they're arguing. It sounds very minute. Is it the first day, the new year? Is it the Festival of Tabernacles, Sukkot? Really, they're arguing in something as a metaphor. Listen to this amazing metaphor. I believe it's profound. What they're arguing is, which is more crucial? Potential or reality? Actuality? How so? Because on the new year for people, God says this is what might be. On Sukkot, 15 days later, it's signed and sealed as a reality. And this is the nature of the actual argument. It seems like they're arguing about a 15-day disparity between the two holidays, but they're not really arguing at all about that. Which is a priority? What might be or what is? Now, we see this in our own lives because we have blessing. Children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, we hear of baby namings and circumcisions, brit milahs, etc. And they are wonderful, joyous events. I am not going to minimize any of that. We love this. A young couple gets married, or an older couple gets married. It's potential of what could be. A life not yet lived. But that's not as great in the eyes of Hillel the rabbi as the life that has been lived or is farther along in the process of living. So while on the first day of the new year we celebrate what might be, a whole lot of water's coming our way. Great. But on Sukkot, it's done. It's a reality. That, according to not only Hillel, but the normative Jewish law, that's why it's Tu Bishvat. We go by this. It's the actuality of the potential of what could be is realized. Think about our own experiences. Is it the potential, or is it the celebration of that potential being realized that is more significant? And I believe that is true. So today we look around the room. We have so many wonderful people that I see here who have given so much to our community, so much to our country, fighting in wars, protecting our lives. This is the celebration that we as Jews and as non-Jews should celebrate. Yes, it's great to have babies. Don't get me wrong. We're not saying, God forbid, we shouldn't have Cain Yeru. You know, we should have millions of Jewish babies and non-Jewish babies born. That's wonderful. But what is really meaningful and really significant, more so even than the potential blessing of a new life, is an older life, farther along in the process, where we get to look back at the holistic vision for the life that was lived. That is a celebration. And that, I believe, is what Rabbis Hillel and Shammai are actually arguing in. So you see that what's a simple little explanation of what Tu Bishvat's about is not a celebration of the seedling that is planted, it's the tree. And it's a beautiful metaphor because we all know to the age that trees could potentially live. So it's a very beautiful metaphor for our lives. So I believe that this is one of the lessons of Tu Bishvat itself. The celebration of a tree's life, of becoming, rather than what might become from a sapling that still has to go through the winter months. Because if you think that a sapling has been planted in August, September, but that seed is a little tenuous at that point. But come springtime, come February, come March, Tu Bishvat time, oh my gosh, it's a different story. Then the life is now solidified. That is becoming part of the process. So we should celebrate, as we are celebrating with the Men's Club and all the fine work that you do, the speakers, the process of life and becoming what you have done, and God willing, ad me'a ve'asrim till the age 120, what you will still have yet to accomplish. So that's one thing I wanted to share with you. The second thing is there's no question that when one looks at Tu Bishvat, this 15th day of the Jewish month of Shvat, you have to understand that it's inexorably tied to our beloved land of Israel. Because the laws, for example, of tithing, of a farmer taking the one-tenth, are only applicable in the land of Israel. They don't apply chutz la'aretz, outside of the land of Israel. So that's very, very simple. That's obvious. Well, if that's true, what are we to learn from the attachment we have for the land of Israel? So the rabbis tell us that the ability that we as humans have to each and every day ascribe everything that we are, everything that we have been, and everything that, God willing, we will become to God, to a greater source of all life. This is something that's not easy to do. So much so that the Jewish people were commanded an almost unthinkable, insane law. Every 7 years, the land gets a year break, a Shabbat, a Sabbath. We call this the Shemitah, the the sabbatical year. They still, this, in this day and age, in Israel, they still keep this law. Once upon a time, can you imagine the Israeli Jewish farmer being told, okay, that's it. Sixth year, you're going to be promised a triple portion. One portion will be for the sixth year for you and your family to sustain you. Then the seventh year, the land will be fallow. And therefore what? You'll have nothing. Poor people will come and take the produce from your fields. And clearly, if you're not even allowed to sow and work the land during the seventh year, the year number one of the next cycle, you also will have nothing. So it's really a three-year promise. And God says, if you lay down your plowshares and trust in me, I promise I'll keep this contract. You'll always be here in Israel. And the rabbi said, this is not a small issue, because the people didn't always live up to this edict. And when they stumbled, the land of Israel was taken away as a direct correlation to this inability to really trust in God. Now remember, this is a big issue. You know, it's one thing to jump into a Red Sea the way the famous head of the tribe of Judah did. And we're not minimizing that. It's fantastic, right? You're standing there and God says to Moses and the Jewish people, yeah, I understand there's a huge 1,000-foot-tall raging sea in front of you. Go. Okay, one moment of inspiration, you go. But that's not logic. Logic is, every seventh year, the farmer has to come face to face with the law. It's not a big light show like it was at the splitting of the Red Sea, where Yul Brynner and the minions go down, right? And Charlton Heston and the guys pass through. It was each and every year. You're living in Israel now. You're actually making a living as a farmer. And I'm telling you, cease and desist. That takes tremendous courage, conviction, and faith. That is what Tu B'Shvat's all about. That each and every year we celebrate our connection to the land. Our understanding of the land of Israel is a tremendous blessing. It's a bracha, yes, but it comes with big conditions. We don't merit it, we lose it. And that has been the reality, tragically, in the past. It's back. It's bigger and better than ever in so many ways. And by the way, just as a side point, don't believe anything that the Western media has to say against Israel, because Israel is the shining light for the world. It really is. Cutting edge technology, the society is glorious. And as we are learning, and we'll perhaps talk about this during the question and answer time that we have in a few minutes, it is the vanguard against the hatred that is against Western civilization. There's a war being fought right now. Make no mistake about it. And Western civilization is at risk in a very profound way. And there are many who are even scared to utter the names of the enemy because they're scared they're going to lose their head. And rightly so. I mean, it's a scary thing. But what happened in France, the attack at the kosher deli right before Shabbat, we're all aware of what happened. Jews in France are saying, what's going on? How could this be France? And they are arguing because they're saying, should we be optimistic or pessimistic about the future? They remember back in the 30s when there was Mr. Schickelgruber, Yimach Shemo, Adolf Hitler, may his memory be obliterated. And people were worried, should we get out of France? Right? And the optimist said, no, come on, it's France, it'll be okay. And the pessimist said, it's time to get out of here. And what happened to the optimist? Tragically, they wound up in Auschwitz-Birkenau. So that's something that the French Jews, literally, I read an article about this 2 days ago. They're dealing with this right now. What should we do? Should we go to Israel? Should we come to America? It's time to leave. Israel's at the vanguard. God forbid, it'll never happen, but if Israel would fall, make absolute clarity, the Western civilization world will fall. And I think the more in touch our government here and the Western governments come with this reality, that Israel is at the vanguard. They are literally the Marines, the SEALs landing on in Normandy. They're right there. And that's the vanguard. They live each and every day with this reality of what they're facing. So just as a side point. Let's get back now to the land of Israel, and then we'll wrap up the Tu B'Shvat segment, shall we say. I believe that there's a profound idea here. There is a human tendency to ascribe everything that we accomplish. So at the beginning, I spoke about wonderful accomplishments that each and every one of you in this room have already done, and God willing will have many years to enjoy for the rest of your lives. But there's a human tendency that once you accomplish, you sort of pump up your chest a little bit and say, yeah, yeah, you know, look what I did. And of course, sometimes we forget the silent partner, God, our Creator, who has always been there every step of the road to be there to encourage us, to help us. And sometimes it's human nature. It says right in the Bible that people will say, it was my hand, my power that made this success. Don't do this, God says. Remember the frailty of the human being. And I just want to share something. I know it sounds a little strange at first, but it's a very profound idea. Each and every day, we hopefully have the ability to go to the bathroom, shall we say, okay? Many times. And there's a blessing, a very strange blessing that's written outside of the bathrooms, in one of the bathrooms here, and it's something that we say when we leave a bathroom. And even though it's a strange thing, because, you know, you don't want to sort of announce, unless you're like a 7-year-old, 8-year-old boy, not that I know of 8-year-old boy, okay? If you're an 8-year-old boy, like my little son, you know, it's a big thing, right? You know, bathroom humor for 8-year-old boys, very big. I don't know if it's for the girls also. But for 8-year-old boys, this is a huge thing, bathroom humor. But it's not a humorous thing. It's very profound. There's a blessing we say. It's called Asher Yatzar. And in that blessing, we say, God, for a moment I had a need, a bodily need. And if I couldn't discharge that need, oh my gosh, what would become of me? I wouldn't exist. And so thank you, God, because you understand the frailty of the human condition. How each and every moment I have to understand that the gift you've given me is immense and enormous. And for 1 minute, if something didn't quite work the way it should work, the way it was designed to work, if I had an extra hole or a lack thereof, boom, I'm done, I'm gone. And this is one of the lessons of setting aside our pick and our axe and our shovel and our farming instruments. We're saying to God, look, I understand. At the end of the day, whatever success I make for myself, my money, everything I have, it's you. And a farmer does it in Israel. This connects, of course, with Tu B'Shvat. But we, on a daily basis, in a smaller local level, we, I'm sure, are mindful of this. I know as a rabbi, it's my last thought to you. And once had an incident where I had Lyme disease and I wound up in an emergency room. And I remember just seeing my wife, my Rebbetzin, come by to see her face to visit me. And I thought, I mean, Baruch Hashem, thank God it was okay. It was okay. They did every MRI, we tested the entire Poughkeepsie medical system and it was great. Kaplan was cured. I was okay. But I remember lying down when I could not get up and seeing my wife come to visit me. And it struck me because I'd never been on the receiving end of a visit like this. And I thought, oh my gosh, I understand. Maybe I'm only here because God needs to understand that when I visit someone who can't get up or has issues, medical issues, and anyone who's been there understands this, it means the world. When we can't do something, we are intimately aware of the frailty of the human condition. And that each and every day we should continue, every one of us, myself included, to be grateful each and every day and thank our Creator for the life that we had, and God willing, for the life that we will have, and to ascribe everything that we have to our Creator.